welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. This podcast aims to bring you expert insights from a multidisciplinary team on recognizing the symptoms of Duchenne muscular dystrophy, key considerations for the diagnosis and pre-symptomatic screening for the condition, and emerging novel therapies for its medical management. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Sarepta Therapeutics. In this podcast, a neurologist and a geneticist discuss the novel pharmacological and gene therapies that are available or emerging for the management of Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
Hello, my name is Dr. Nadia Merchant. I am a geneticist and endocrinologist at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C. I am joined today by Dr. Kuntz, a professor of pediatrics and neurology at Northwestern University in Chicago. It's great to have you here today.
Hello.
In this section, we will consider the question, what novel pharmacological and gene therapies are available or emerging for the management of DMD? So genetic testing for Duchenne muscular dystrophy is very important because I think as the emerging treatments are coming, a lot of them are targeted to specific variants that exist. So I know there's a few that have been approved specifically for antisense oligonucleotides for exon skipping therapies. Can you explain a little bit what those are and how they're being used?
Nadia, you make such a good point about knowing the exact mutation of the dystrophin gene because many, if not most of these disease-modifying therapies have to be selected specifically to suit the individual's mutation. So with exon skipping, the intent is to take out another deletion, to carve out another piece of the gene so that instead of failing to read through or produce any protein, it reads through again with that additional deletion and produces a smaller protein, but smaller proteins better than none. So the first, and we now have four different in the United States, FDA approved, and approved also in the European Union, I understand, agents that serve a fraction of the children with Duchenne. So the studies all started with medications that were administered intravenously once a week and have to keep up that therapy to have benefit. But the first ones were amenable to exon 51 skipping. So there are a number of different kinds of mutations that if you add in or take out the additional exon 51, that they will become a read-through so that they can produce some protein. This is eteplirsen, and it's now commercially approved. This is pertinent to about 13 or 14% of individuals with Duchenne. Then scientists just moved on and found the next exon skipping agent that would affect the next largest group of boys with Duchenne. One very effective one is exon 45, and that's been named casimersen. And that helps about 8% additional types of mutation. Again, it's not a single mutation, but a group that benefits from the addition of exon 45 to the current deletion. And then finally, there have been trials for exon 53, which adding that in as a skip benefits another 8% of the boys with Duchenne. And there have been two separate approaches to that by different scientific groups, golodirsen and viltolarsen. Both of those benefit boys where exon 53 skip will bring them back into reading frame. But the important thing is that each of these agents will not help all individuals with Duchenne, just the boys who have the kind of mutation or the group of mutations that if you add on just a little bit more out of the picture, that they'll go back from out of frame to in frame.
So I think that leads me to the next kind of group that I think about is like the synthetic steroid like vamorolone that's come about and, you know, currently being studied, because that applies to like more generally the population with everybody with DMD versus, and we could use it instead of prednisone, maybe a deflazacort, if it's as promising as some of us think it will be.
Right.
And then there's also the other category, I think, that's currently being the monoclonal antibody that's also being studied. That's something that I also am thinking of, which may be more generalized for the other, for the population. That's pembrolizumab, I believe. And then let's go on a little bit more on the genetics specifically, because I find those exciting. So the exon skipping, there's also the stop codon read-through therapy that's been, I believe, approved in some places. Can you tell me a little bit about that one?
Well, again, you know, some of the mutations that occur in the dystrophin gene or any gene create a false stop so that the protein reading is terminated and there's no effective protein produced. And so not just with Duchenne, but in any of situations where there's a stop codon, there have been agents developed that kind of power a read-through in that circumstance. The current one that has been most effective as an oral agent taken daily is Adalurin. Now, this has been in clinical trial for a number of years in the U.S. and Europe. It is currently approved in Europe, but it has not yet been acted on in the United States, so it's not available.
And then I think the other one that everybody's always talking about is gene replacement therapy, the magic cure. But what do you think about it? I know we're still a ways to go for, especially for almost everybody with Duchenne, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first off, gene replacement therapy is a new protocol, a new technique in humans, and there's a lot to learn. And we understand and anticipate some of the side effects by pre-treating individuals with daily oral steroids. Even the boys who are already on steroids, their dose is increased prior to and for a number of weeks or months after the single infusion, IV infusion of gene replacement. So this is something where I feel very humbled, where we have to really acknowledge that we don't understand yet all of the impact, both in terms of efficacy and potential side effects. But with this, it is something very exciting and promising. The problem with the dystrophin gene is that it's very large, over 79 exons, and the volume, people know how to synthesize the entire gene, but it will not fit into the currently available viral vectors. So it cannot be given as an entire gene to replace the defective one. So right now, a number of scientific groups, I think the count is currently 5 around the world, have different theories about which portions of this very large dystrophin gene are the most critical to include. So they pick out, you know, the N-terminal and the C-terminal and the other parts in between, and they get their ideas by testing in animal models as well as looking at natural mutations that occur in Becker muscular dystrophy. There are some individuals with relatively mild Becker muscular dystrophy who have very short dystrophin genes. And so many of the scientific groups have been imitating that. There are two limitations to gene therapy in addition to all of the unknowns about it. One is that it requires this viral vector, and there are a number of serotypes of adeno-associated virus that are being used right now. And if an individual has existing immunity to them, they cannot get 10 to the 14 copies of that antigen delivered IV. So the existing rate of immunity in the community varies in different communities and at different ages. But a study that was done in boys with Duchenne at the age where they would be eligible for gene replacement therapy showed that it was about 17%, I believe, somewhere less than 20%. So that well over 80%, between 80 and 90% of individuals were not, in that study, immune. But that is one limitation. The other limitation is that they are not currently testing or including in clinical trials individuals who have mutations in the first 18 exons, because there is some concern about not having had previous exposure to that part of the protein, creating increased possibility of immune reaction. We don't know if that will continue to be an issue or whether that will be surmounted. But with all of these, there have been a number of probably over 100 individuals treated with gene replacement therapy with the different approaches, at least four different approaches so far. And one of them is closer to has been submitted to the FDA, and we may hear within 2023 about that becoming commercially available. That's delandistrogene moxiparvovec, the one that has treated over 100 boys so far. There are a number of other scientific groups, fortidistrogene moxiparvovec, and then others that haven't been named from several other scientific groups that are in the pipeline, and that we will get a lot more information once there's more experience.
And I believe there's some deaths that have been in severe side effects that have been reported in some of the cases too. So I think that's also what makes everybody a little more cautious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been a number of side effects, including some complement-mediated immune side effects with some of the therapies. And as you mentioned, there was one death.
Yes, I think this is very exciting times where we're starting to diagnose patients maybe with the newborn screen feed the future, and then along with having more and more emerging treatments and maybe combination therapy that I think we can't really predict what's ahead for us. And we all hope that there's better treatments available for all these children. Well, it was great talking to you today, and I always learn more. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget there are three other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.